SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races, coming to you from Old Hilltop Pimlico Race Course. And as we come back from the break and considering so much conversation on the riders and what's going on, I didn't want to get into a big conversation per se today. We're going to save it for next week after the wake of this Triple Crown stop, but the Jocks Guild and NTRA reached out to Steve Cook, who is not interested in negotiating this in the media, and I don't blame him. They will work. The Safety and Integrity Alliance and NTRA will work quietly with the Guild, see if they can't bring them back into the fold. And meanwhile, NYRA with a detailed statement yesterday and addressing what really does feel like some hyperbole on the part of the Guild. I mean, the notion that, you know, that the racetracks and other forms of management are not interested in the health and welfare of the jockeys is just preposterous, and that nothing's been done, or it's just ridiculous. I mean, the statement has become evident that the NTRA has not been an advocate for the jockeys' well-being for the past several years. That's just an outright falsehood, and serves no good purpose in this discussion and in this attempt that everybody's on the same page in terms of doing everything that can be done to prevent or to make things better. I mean, the fact is, in a lot of cases, the jocks themselves are at odds internally. I mean, talk about the concussion protocols, okay, except that the jocks don't necessarily want a protocol in place that will prevent them. Guy gets thrown in the third race on a big race Saturday, and the concussion protocol rules him out, and they've got a mount in a million-dollar race 3 hours later. Why don't the jocks get on the same page themselves first, and then there can be a reasonable discussion about things like the protocols. And frankly, it just feels like. The Guild is particularly trying to just throw everything in the industry under the bus with the assumption that, oh, everybody's going to just back the jocks. Everybody appreciates the jocks' position, believe me. But, I mean, it's really unproductive the way this was brought out, particularly the NYRA, they blindsided the NTRA. There was no discussion. Then the thing with NYRA, the attorneys have been working on the contract since December, and that a bit of a blindside. So I don't know. I wanted to slip that in. The pedigree portion of the Preakness, that question as a standalone event, and I'm curious, I think we discussed this maybe in the past once or twice with Sid Fernando, who joins us now, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Sid, we know what the Derby does in terms of a headliner and what kind of weight it carries. What does a Preakness win historically? What has it meant to Sire's potential?
Well, all the classics really, they're important. It adds prestige, and you know, it's just, it's going to, it's a big, it's a big note on the resume. It's always important, I think. And, you know,
is
go ahead.
No, is this because it? I mean, it's so funny because the race is you know, people say, oh, it's shorter. Well, okay. It's 110 yards. It's not that different from the Derby. That's one of the things about that whole Scat Daddy thing going into the Derby that was kind of funny, about no Scat Daddy is been successful going 10 furlongs, except that Mendelsohn had won the UAE Derby at the Preakness distance. So,
yeah.
I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same.
And also,
it's
the Scat Daddies had won, you know, over the distance, as we pointed out, in South America, too.
There you go.
It's just, Steve, it's, you know, I think the pedigree portion plays heavily, obviously, when you go into the Derby, because Mendelsohn had one race, you know, close to that trip. But most horses were coming from 9 furlong races. When you go to the Preakness, it doesn't have the same type of weight in terms of, you know, looking at a horse for the distance. Of course, the ramifications of winning the race. It's a classic race, and you know, it's a race that adds to stud value, and it's one of the most prestigious races in the country for three-year-old goals.
We look at the winners, and there's probably some discussion to have, you know, comparing Derby winners with Preakness winners, and you know, here's a, I mean, obviously Curlin in recent years, and Bernardini in particular. But you also had, you know, some horses that have not really, that never really came to full flower as sires, and you go back to Red Bullet and even Point Given to an extent. You know, Fleet Alex and Smarty Jones have had their successes, obviously. War Emblem had, you know, was a shy breeder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Big Brown has been useful. Looking at Lucky, Shackleford, they're still in their, you know, still in the process. Mm-hmm. Oxbow, still, you know, kind of just getting going. California and Chrome and American Pharaoh look to be, you know, based on, you know, the early physicals and reception, look like they're, mm-hmm, you know, going to be big hits.
A lot of those that you mentioned, of course, were Derby as well as Preakness winners.
Right.
But I think the fact that you mentioned, you know, Bernardini and Curlin, here are two horses, Preakness winners, that are among the elite stallions right now. I mean, if there's any cachet to it, those two certainly hold it. And, both those horses... both of those horses have attained a level in recent memory, just standalone Preakness winners. I mean, those two stand out. You can throw in from recent past horses like Summer Squall, but Curlin is particularly just a tremendous classic influence. He's got obviously good magic, who was the champion two-year-old colt last year, second in the Derby, but he's got this young colt tenfold in the race as well. It's just a testament to his ability that he's had a classic placed horse or a classic winner every year he's had three-year-olds. So the weight of this Preakness as a stud, as a harbinger of stud, certainly being carried by Curlin and Bernardini right now. And it's something that anybody who wins this race can certainly use as advertising material as well. Carlin, of course, also had Exaggerator won this race.
Just saying hello to Alan Foreman, who's going to join us next, and thank you. Alan's presenting me with the match series paraphernalia, which I appreciate. We're gonna talk about Mid-Atlantic issues with him. Sid, I want to give everybody, I think, a bit of a treat when it comes to a Preakness winner. In fact, a Derby Preakness winner that was unable to close out the Triple Crown. But we're looking at the dates in history when it comes to today. And it was a May 16th Derby in 64. And we've got the call of Northern Dancer's Preakness win. And Bill Hartack aboard. And, of course, E.P. Taylor in attendance. And I actually had fun this morning watching Northern Dancer's Preakness and Belmont. And Casey, if you're ready, listen to Northern Dancer, and then we'll talk about his long-term, obviously, his long-term import. The 1964 Preakness.
They're off. We're away to a good start. The Scoundrel off a little bit on the start, pinched off between Northern Dancer and Hill Rise, is now trailing, but they're running in a tight bunch as they come past the stands the first time with Big Pete on the lead. It's Big Pete out in front. Northern Dancer, Hill Rise, and Quadrangle moving up on the outside of him, bringing up the rear of the Scoundrel and Roman Brother. And as they go to the first turn, Big Pete holds the lead and the rail. He's out there by a head. Quadrangle left to the outside is second by three-quarters of a length. Northern Dancer is third. The Scoundrel is moving up on the inside now and gets to fourth. Hill Rise is in tight quarters. And Bill Shoemaker just biding his time as he sets him in fifth position going around the turn with Roman Brother last. Now they spin out of the turn and start down the backstretch. Big Pete in front by just a nose. Quadrangle being rated right alongside of him, but not wanting to pass him this early in the game. Northern Dancer is third. Hill Rise now is moving a little earlier than was true in the Derby. He's going up to fourth on the outside. The Scoundrel is running fifth, and Roman Brother is a close sixth. Halfway down the backstretch, they're in a tight bunch. Now Quadrangle has the lead, and Northern Dancer and Hill Rise are going up on the outside. Big Pete is finished and is dropping back. They go to the far turn, and it is Northern Dancer, Quadrangle, Hill Rise racing head and head, and the Scoundrel is right behind him. Roman Brother now moves up in the fifth position. Big Pete drops off to last. Northern Dancer, halfway around the turn, has the lead. It's Northern Dancer on the lead. Hill Rise is running second on the outside. Quadrangle snug on the rail is third. And now the horses fan out a little bit from the rail as they're coming down the turn, and here they are on the home stretch. Northern Dancer showing the way. It's Northern Dancer out in front by a couple of lengths. Hill Rise is running second at the eighth pole. The Scoundrel under a whip is coming up to third. The Quadrangle is hanging in there third as well. Northern Dancer leading by 2.5 lengths. The Scoundrel moving to second. Hill Rise is third. Quadrangle is fourth. Here comes that finish line. Northern Dancer by 2 lengths.
There you go. And Northern Dancer, Sid, one of the things I sent you a link to the Belmont. And
yeah, I enjoyed that.
It's unbelievable. That was actually a Naira production, the Belmont tape. And in the stretch, as Quadrangle pulls away from Roman Brother and Northern Dancer, Quadrangle looks literally twice the size of not just Northern Dancer, who was already known to be a smallish colt. But
right.
Roman Brother must have been smallish too, because Quadrangle, it was one of those cases where it was Quadrangle was taking one jump to their two each.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I was stunned when I saw that video myself, because I mean, it's no exaggeration. He did look tiny. That's Roman Brother in second, and Quadrangle looked absolutely massive.
Talk about Northern Dancer, Sid, and what the expectations were, and you can even use this as a juxtaposition to Justify, and any other large stallion. Point Given was a big horse. Midnight Loot is a big horse. When it comes to stallion prospect and expectation and how much of size factors in, and bring us back to the Northern Dancer era and when everything sort of came together for him and the lasting influence.
Well, the interesting part about Northern Dancer, and stories well told, of course, was that E.P. Taylor, who bred him, had him would sell his yearlings privately, had price tags on them, and of course, his price tag of $25,000 wasn't met. So Taylor raced him, and the reason it wasn't met was because he was so small. Now, he was a small, big horse in the sense that he was a small horse, but he had a tremendous musculature and bulk to him. Did not look like your prototypical classic type of horse. You know, horses like Justify. This actually is interesting because of my TDN column I'm doing for Friday is on Bob Baffert. And one of the things I asked Bob was this musculature, the size, for example, this Northern Dancer size, he passed that on pretty much to his offspring. And so when they went to the commercial marketplace, he kind of redefined the look of the commercial horses during that era of his stud career, because people got used to, people started actually buying these small powerhouse type of horses. Nijinsky, of course, his first top son was an exception with a big rangy horse. But others such as Danzig, Leifard, Nureyev, they fit that mold of what we're used to, and it redefined the commercial marketplace in terms of the Preakness, too. It's interesting because E.P. Taylor did stand Northern Dancer in Maryland at his Wingfields farm in Chesapeake City. But I was talking to Bob Backwood because when he came up in 89, it's always struck me that he's never had, for example, a good Danzig. I asked him about, why, I said, in terms of Justify, I said, you did not look at this horse because Scat Daddy was obviously a turf stallion. And that was part of the Northern Dancer trend, by the way, Steve. What he ended up doing was he revolutionized the turf game. Even though he was a dirt horse, his progeny excelled on the turf, especially in Europe. And he redefined the entire game in Europe because these big, rangy stairs in England didn't have the pace the Northern Dancers did. They had so many gear shifts, and they came there and just, took over the mile-and-a-half races over there. But getting back to Baffert, I asked him about that, and to my surprise, he said, in 89, he had taken a trip to visit all the stud farms, the big ones in Kentucky. He wanted to see what good thoroughbreds looked like. He was just a cowboy back then, just making that transition. Secretariat, Nijinsky, Mr. Prospector, Appiano at Lane's End. And then when Danzig was let out, he said, oh my God, that's my horse. And he said something surprising. He said, I love Danzig. And to me, that was so surprising, And of course, it makes sense because he transitioned from the quarter horse arena, and Danzig, like a Northern Dancer, was muscular, powerfully built, blocky. And of course, Baffert said, I asked him why he never had any, and he said because he couldn't afford them. He was, buying $20,000 horses, trying to stretch them to 30, and of course, Danzig was at the height of the marketplace, right? So interesting that he liked that look. Now, that look, interestingly, he's... one part of this story, Steve, is that I asked him about the Scat Daddies. He said he never looked at the Scat Daddies. You know, he just assumed they were going to be turf horses, and just assumed that Coolmore was going to buy up all the good ones anyway. So it's interesting that he never actually looked at Justify when Justify was a Keeneland yearling. Now, he said he's subsequently seen pictures of Justify as a weanling and as a yearling, and he just struck by how beautiful the horse was, even as a weanling and a yearling. In fact, he said he looked like a halter horse, which is, you know, a show horse. He describes the horse right now as incredibly gorgeous, one of the most gorgeous horses you'll ever see. And he said a couple of things which kind of ties in to Northern Dancer in a way, and Danzig, that he liked, that Musky Richer. You know, he said that this horse is between 16-2 and 16-3. You know, a point given, his Preakness winner was a big horse, 16-3, almost 17 hands. But the difference between the two, he said, is that whereas point given was a big slab-sided hunk of a horse, Justify is a big, strong horse with incredible musculature, muscle upon muscle. So he actually looks bigger because he's wider, he's more musculature. In essence, what Justify has is that same type of musculature he so admired when he first saw Danzig. But as he's evolved through the ages, and what he found is that he likes a little more leg and scope to horses. So, you know, a lot of his horses have been, you know, a little bigger, scopier type of horse. But he loves speed. He loves musculature, which kind of signifies that type of speed. And in a way, Justify has that musculature he so admired in a horse like Danzig from the Northern Dancer tribe with the extra leg and some scope. And so, you know, there's some consistency in what Baffert has. And, of course, Baffert played no role in getting this horse. Is Elliot Walden, who sent the horse to Bob. Bob also, by the way, you know, people wonder why this horse came to hand maybe a little later. Well, one thing is he's a big horse. He's a big horse. He was, you know, a foundation was put on him at Windstar. Then Rodolphe Brissette had him for a few works at Keeneland before Baffert got him in November. Interestingly, Baffert also pointed out to me that he subsequently learned, and this is not that big a deal, but I hadn't seen it before, but apparently Justify also had cycle surgery, too. So, you know, big horse. There are reasons why the horse kind of did come to hand a little later, but the funny thing about this story, too, that I'm going to, I guess we're off on a tangent here on this, but Elliot Walden had told Baffert, you know, I sent you a really good horse, but Baffert had sent the horse to Los Al with his assistant there. And I guess Elliot was, you know, chafing because he wanted the horse with Baffert with the first string at Santa Anita. But Bob said his assistant at Los Al loved the horse. And by the time Baffert got him in January, and worked him, he said, wow, this is some kind of special horse. He called up Elliot, told him that. Elliot said, I've been telling you that. I've been trying to get you to have the horse move to Santa Anita, you know. And you know, that's part of the Justify story, but it includes some interesting aspects of, you know, Bob's preference in build and how it does tie in with that Northern Dancer tribe. Of course, this is the Northern Dancer sire line through Stormcat.
On that topic, and when you look at Northern Dancer both physically and then, as you even referenced, getting into what was a remarkable series of produce that really set the course for turf racing worldwide. I mean, when you start listing off Lafarge and Sadler's Wells and so forth.
It's
an amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's dominant because what you have through Northern Dancer, it's a revolution like none you've ever seen before. Because through Northern Dancer, of course, you had the Nijinsky, the classic horses, and you know Nijinsky still remains to this day the only horse that's ever sired the winner of an Epsom Derby, as well as a Kentucky and French and Irish. Okay, but you go through Northern Dancer and through Nijinsky, and say you give that real classic element, mile and a half, so forth. Sadler's Wells took it to a different level, another son of Northern Dancer. And, of course, he got Galileo Marjeux, who kept that mile and a half and up profile in Europe. Marjeux was perhaps more stouter, mile and a half to mile and three quarters. Galileo had been able to be supple enough to win the Guineas, like Frankel, win the Derby, and even get Ledger winners. But the specialist miler group, Northern Dancer, got through his son Danzig, the horse that Baffert admired most. That was really the speed wing of Northern Dancer. And to this day, you know, Danzig is known, and his sons are known. And if you look at his son Warfront right now, the last, along with Hard Spun, really good Danzig left. You know, Warfront's métier is turf mile, right? And if you look at the classics, the most recent classics this weekend, Camacho and Declaration of War, two Danzig line horses got responsible for the French Guineas winners, Colts and Phillies. I mean, you know, Dane Hill, son of Danzig, established the whole Europe-Australia axis and created that entire speed wing on turf in Australia. So it's easy to, we've taken it for granted, but the extent of what that 1964 Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner, the unusually sized little big horse, what he ended up doing for the breed is just mind-boggling, and that's an understatement to say it.
And it's fascinating when you look at Nureyev and Sadler's Wells and how, you know, how they were produced. You know, what, 10 plus years into his, you know, plus more than that even, into, because Sadler's Wells was 1980 maybe. The lasting impact, I mean, the fountainhead out of him. And I will make the point, Sid, off the cuff, how often we talk about the Euro look, that blocky, whenever I see them Breeders' Cup week, they all look squared up to me, and that is all Northern Dancer.
Yeah, I mean, his influence in Europe particularly is so huge, and especially the miler types. I mean, yeah, that's so true. The Northern Dancer look is prevalent over there. In the case of Sadler's Wells and Nureyev, you know, they're three-quarter brothers, both incredible horses, and so they were from the same family. And you know, it's interesting that those two horses were so significant in terms of influence and what they did at the track. Of course, Sadler's Wells branch of that has just, you know, become its own Northern Dancer type of line. You know, it's continuing on, whereas the Nureyev line has, you know, kind of petered out in a way compared to that. Also, to mention, those two horses were from the same family, and so were Northern Dancers, two Epsom Derby winners, Nijinsky and the Minstrel. Again, the three-quarter brothers as well over there.
Hmm.
So, it's far-reaching. The Minstrel, of course, didn't have the same type of lasting influence. Some did, some didn't. And it's hard to tell what, but the overall presence, Nate Silver had put out a chart before the Preakness pointing out that all 20 starters had Mr. Prospector in their pedigrees. I retweeted the chart and said, yeah, but so does the Northern Dancer. and that's the far-reaching influence.
Well, and there we could literally get sets of the siblings, including Vice Regent and Vice Regal,
and what
they've done. There's books. Avalyn Hunter, she wrote a book, and Kevin Chong as well. He's got a Northern Dancer book. I mean, it for those that want to understand this and the tentacles, you got plenty of resources. Sid, I've got to wrap up. I've got Alan Foreman with me, but your final Preakness thoughts. I mean, they're going to draw at 5 o'clock today, but we know the eight involved. Your Preakness thoughts.
Well, I think Justify looks to be a really special horse. I've made a career trying to beat the last Baffert horses for the last few years, but I think I'm just going to sit back and, I think Tenfold is a horse, the Curlin that you want to look at. The Winchells, they're not silly when it comes to this kind of stuff. Good Magic, he's going to have another shot at the horse, but, everybody else, we pretty much know they've been exposed. So I do like Tenfold as a horse to use in the race with some value.
Excellent. That's what we're all looking for. And Sid, we'll either be preparing for a Triple Crown try or trying to figure out what happened when we talk next week.
Yeah, you got it, Steve.
So much fun. Sid Fernando, everybody. And I wanted to use the anniversary today, going back to 1964, May 16th. Northern Dancers Preakness win in front of 38,000, something like that, which used to be a crowd for the Preakness. And now there's three times that, and it's been that way a long time. Looking up over my shoulder, Pimlico Infield, a big part of that, a great article from The Sun in 82 that I actually pulled out of storage. We're going to take the time out here, and when we come back, Alan Foreman is going to join me, and we've got a number of topics. We'll talk first and foremost about the Match Series, though, which kicks off. It's back. It's big. Better than ever. Right? Alan says we hope. We're back after this. Stay with us. We're at Pimlico, and hi-ho, as they say, and we're going to do some Pimlico history, too, with Alan and broach the topic about the future here versus Laurel and his thoughts. And, of course, Alan's synonymous with so much of what goes on, not just in this region, but really nationally with his legal expertise and counsel to so many different organizations in Satish's alphabet soup.
I certainly am.
Back after this with Alan Foreman. Stay with us. We're live at Pimlico.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at brisnet.com/APR. The brisnet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit brisnet.com for all this information and more, and discover why brisnet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by 5.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton 2-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.